allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Go with our roll call.
Commissioner Hart.
Here.
Commissioner Mello.
Here.
Commissioner Lindler.
Here.
Commissioner Veal.
Here.
Chair Fowle.
Present.
Full house today.
Full house. Minutes from June 26th, 2024. Any changes, amendments, or modifications to those minutes? If not, I'll entertain a motion.
So moved.
Do I hear a second?
Second.
Commissioner Mello moved. Commissioner Veal is the second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same.
I abstain.
Let the record show, 4 in the affirmative, 1 abstention, Commissioner Lindler.
Thank you.
Any unscheduled appearances? Any conflicts of interest?
Not that I'm aware of.
If you're a Verizon customer, is that...
If you're a Verizon customer...
I'm not, but I'm asking.
We're getting crappy service.
What service?
So I wouldn't even call it service. So it's kind of an oxymoronic statement.
Okay. All right. Sorry for the oxymoron.
Yeah.
All right. Did you really want to open that can of worms?
No.
How long you been on this planning commission?
Yeah. Okay. In the agenda, you can see the description for presentation of documents, the availability of public records. Our public hearing protocol is listed. Right of appeal statement, I will read. The project heard at the Planning Commission meeting may be subject to appeal within 10 calendar days of today's meeting. The 10th day falls on the weekend. The appeal must be received by the following business day. Please contact County Clerk for information. Appeals must be submitted to County Clerk's office together with the appeal fee of $1,250. Challenge the environmental review or the project proposal in court. You may be limited to raising only those issues raised at the public hearing or in written correspondence delivered to Citizens County Planning at or prior to the public hearing. Moving on now. Number one, project. Brunner, or is it Brunner?
Brunner.
Brunner use permit, UP2127. Rachel?
That's a change.
We would like to continue this to a date uncertain.
Okay. Do we have a motion to continue Brunner use permit UP2127 to a date uncertain?
I'll move.
Moved by Commissioner Lindler. Second?
Second.
Second by Commissioner Mello. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same. Let the record show unanimous. New business. Agenda item 1. Towers LLC use permit UP2407. Rachel, is this you?
It is.
You have the floor.
Thank you. Rachel Jarab, Senior Planner. This is the Towers LLC use permit UP2407. This use permit project proposes to develop the project site with a 125-foot lattice wireless communications facility within a 40-by-40 lease area. The project site is located on County Highway A-12 at the intersection of Shasta Vista Drive. The property is currently developed with a single-family dwelling, detached garage, and multiple small agricultural buildings that support the intensive livestock farming use of the property. The property is zoned for prime agricultural uses, and wireless communication facilities are a conditionally permitted use in that district. The facility is proposed to be constructed with space for 2 tenants. Verizon is proposed as the first carrier, and with this location, we'll be able to provide 700 megahertz and 2100 megahertz coverage to an area that is deficient, particularly with in-building coverage at 700 megahertz and in-vehicle and outdoor coverage at 21 megahertz. There are no existing cell sites available for co-location in this area. The project is consistent with the general plan and zoning for its area and is proposed to be exempt from CEQA pursuant to CEQA guidelines sections 15303 and 15304 as the project proposes a limited number of small structures and minor alterations to the land where no trees are proposed to be removed. Additionally, there are no unusual circumstances or future activities which might reasonably result in this project having a significant effect on the environment. One adjacent property owner requested more information regarding the project, but did not submit a comment. Environmental Health, CAL FIRE, and Air Pollution Control commented on this project, and because of those comments, conditions were added regarding hazardous materials business plan requirements, 4290 requirements, and air pollution control requirements. Staff recommends adopting the categorical exemption and approving the use permit for this project. There is a suggested motion in the packet. Additionally, Steve Crew with the Towers LLC is here and he would like to give a presentation at the appropriate time. Thank you.
All right. Any questions by the commission at this time?
No. Not any?
Nope.
So we will go ahead and move on to the project proponent. This time, if you'd like to come forward.
Good morning, commissioners. My name is Steve Pro. I am with Complete Wireless Consulting, and I represent the Towers and Verizon Wireless. I have a presentation that I'm having Rachel pull up now that can help guide what I'm talking about and visuals for you all. So the Towers and Verizon Wireless is proposing a 125-foot tall lattice tower that will include 9 antennas on 3 sectors mounted at a center line between 123 and 125 feet at the top of the tower. It will also include 2 microwave dishes and 130-kilowatt emergency standby generator. The proposed facility will be enclosed by a 40 by 40-foot square lease area and a chain link fence. Next slide, please. Here I have photo simulations from 4 different views of different angles of what the facility will look like. Next slide, please. This first simulation here is from Henry Cash Road, looking southeast at the site, approximately 1 mile away.
Which you mean Harry Cash?
Harry.
Apologies. For Harry Cash Road there. And the second view, please. This is a view from Highway A12 looking north at the site, approximately 500 feet away. You can see the antennas really at the light. It blends in well with the background, with the design of the tower there. Our next slide is a view also from Highway A12 looking northwest at the site, approximately 3/4 of a mile away. And our last slide, is from Highway A12 looking northwest at the site, approximately 900 feet away. Here is a coverage map. Verizon Wireless seeks to improve coverage communications in this area of Siskiyou County and the community of Montague, excuse me. Presently, this area of the county suffers from poor wireless coverage levels. The proposed tower will improve wireless coverage as well as provide all users with cell phone access to dial emergency services. In addition to coverage, this site will also help offload capacity issues from a neighboring site and then at the Herd Peak site. This picture shows what the current coverage levels are at. And on this following slide here, this shows what the coverage levels will look like once the site is activated. The red has improved outdoor coverage, yellow shows improved in-vehicle coverage, and green outlines improved inside and outside all-around coverage. On our next slide, we have done our due diligence and went with radio frequency reports, noise studies. We are all within the FCC guidelines. This site here is at a 7.20% allow rate of the FCC from ground level. So that's really, really low. And our next slide. Lastly, this site does comply with all the standards zoned in AG1, prime agriculture. It is engineered to allow co-location for future carriers. It has been designed at minimum functioning height, so it can fill the significant coverage gap. But if I have any questions, if you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them for you.
Thank you.
Okay. Do we have anyone else wishing to speak? Let the record show no one else is in attendance in the room. So, we can dispense with opposition and rebuttal. And I'm sure we probably will have some questions for you. We'll go ahead and close the public hearing portion, take it to the commission, and commission, questions for project proponent and or staff?
I just have a quick question. So just, so there's going to be a diesel generator on site?
Yes, it's a 30 kilowatt emergency standby generator. Okay. So when,
and is it on a cement pad or just
it
a gravel?
Is.
Okay.
Yeah, it's on a cement concrete pad.
And so as far as like fire safety in that area, is it, what's the clearance for like bare ground or gravel around that diesel generator?
Yeah, so in the plans on there here, let me pull them up here. The site is located at the back of the parcel line. The parcel right behind that is also owned by the same owners as well.
Okay.
On there. And so the generator is located on the back right of the parcel there. There's two, I'm looking on page A12 on the large slide pan of the plans here. And so all the equipment is based on in the back right-hand corner.
Okay.
That, so there's enough ample space for doors opening, cabinets, et cetera, as well as enough space for any future co-locators to come in so they could fit in right inside that lease space. There's really no need to add additional.
Okay. But the clearance, is it all going to be bare ground around it just for fire safety, I assume?
Correct, yeah.
Without,
yeah.
I know there's nothing, but grasses and forbs and, you know, that area. I just want to make sure it's got an adequate bare ground area around the diesel. But other than that, that's my only question.
And just to give you a little bit background on the generator, it's going to run twice a month, you know, just for maintenance purposes in there. It's only going to really be activated during an emergency. So if you lose power, you know, or anything along those lines, it will then be activated. Our generators work with, they have 8 hours of battery time, and after that, then they'll fuel on, refuel the batteries, so on and so forth, for a good 72 hours once it's activated.
Got it, okay. Thank you.
This is only, so does the cement pad, is it a containment pad?
It is, yes.
So that somebody doesn't come up and vandalize it?
No, yeah. We have a fence area of a 6-foot chain link fence around the 40 by 40 lease area. And I believe that we have brought this to the fire department as well, and they have viewed and approved these.
Okay, you can stay there.
Okay.
I'm waiting for Commissioner
Beal.
Well,
I just don't want any more chemicals dumped out there. We've already got enough of that.
We've been down this road before, and they've taken the necessary precautions, if I remember right.
Correct, yes. Same. We are also CEQA exempt on this project. Yes. We do fall in with all requirements.
No, sir. Not at this point.
Commissioner Beal, questions?
No.
Is it my turn?
You got the floor.
Okay. Question one. It looks like this tower will allow for one other co-share?
One to two other additional. So Verizon will be the first anchor tenant and will be taking the top center line. Up to two other carriers can really get onto it.
Okay.
One could go directly right below us.
All right. Is there any reason we're not making this taller to allow more than just one or two others to cohabitate?
This is what the applicant requested. We don't have any requirements for mandating that they have a certain height.
Not necessarily concerned with the height, but the ability to cohabitate with more than one or two others, because,
right.
And I voiced this a couple months ago.
So
we've got the transition of 4G to 5G, and we're going to need more stinking towers for 5G because it doesn't carry as far because of the wavelength. And so rather than start getting 25, 30 additional applications in here for companies to put in 5G because they aren't servicing the 4G, why in the heck aren't we making these towers required to be tall enough to handle up to four additional carriers?
So county code just requires that they have the ability to co-locate. However, it does not stipulate a certain number. As long as there's at least two, that still counts as co-location. So we don't have a requirement for three or four space. It's just co-locating.
I get your answer. I don't like it.
I understand.
This tower ought to be of a size proportionate to be able to handle up to, I would say, a minimum of four carriers. Because otherwise we're going to see these popping up all over. And we're going to be, you know, what was it, 6-7 years ago, 10 years ago, we had 10 of these that came before us in 1 year. And we're going to be going through the same thing, but I'll bet you it'll be in triple. It'll be 60 of them.
Yeah, 10 years ago, too, each company had to have a tower. Do you remember?
Well, and they were co-locating.
Was it Hilton that they're stacked
the
in there?
Yep.
There's four or five of them right next to each other because you couldn't hang one different carrier on the same pole or same tower, whatever you want to call it.
So how big of an issue would it be to engineer this to be able to handle up to four?
I have seen towers that have been approved up to like 195 feet. We don't want to go over 200 feet because we have, FAA clearance and airline clearance. So one thing to also be aware of is, as well with telecommunications, is that there is a FCC code called 6409 Eligible Facilities Request. And what that allows is for any carrier to add on top, add height to an existing tower, up to 20 feet. So another, say if you, we would love to go higher. I cannot imagine a radio frequency engineer doesn't want the more height to, as you were saying, get the a wider coverage area. But say if we raise it to like 150, another carrier could come in the future and raise it up to an additional 20 feet. Vertical Bridge and Verizon feels that this height is at a minimal functioning height to get sufficient service. A good service for Verizon customers. We could definitely go up higher if the commission would like that.
But you're saying at a later date, the foundation of this tower would allow to go higher
if
at a future date?
Yes, if another carrier wants to come in and co-locate onto it, they can come into the county, do a similar application that we did, and either add antennas on right below our antennas or ask to raise the tower height by 20 feet.
20 feet.
Okay, so council, question, this is a question for you. If in 4 months, let's just say AT&T comes in and they have a project proposal to put in a tower that's within a mile of where this one is, should we approve it? Or is it within our purview where we say, nope, you go talk to Verizon and add 20 feet onto their tower and that's where you're gonna be. We're not building a new tower. You're gonna go taller on the Verizon tower.
No, we wouldn't have any direct authority to do that if they came in with their own application to build their own tower.
So we essentially deny it and say, your option, go talk to Verizon.
No, I'm saying we would not have the ability just to deny it and say, go talk to
Why not?
Well, they're coming in with their own application to build on their own property. I don't know of any.
It wouldn't be their property. They're getting a use permit to do a lease on someone else's property. AT&T doesn't own any land in Siskiyou County that I know of
right now.
They're right. All that, on leases.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I meant. I mean, they were. If I understand it, you're saying if they come in for an application for a conditional use permit to build their own tower, by their own property, and then yes, by a leased property on somebody's private land. No, I don't know of any authority where we could just say your application for a CUP is denied because there's another tower a mile away that you could locate on.
If I may add on to that to help give you an answer to your question, in that particular scenario, what quote unquote AT&T would do is when they submit their application, because your county does have a co-location requirement, the county would ask them to be like, hey, why can't this tower work? Show us the data, show us the coverage maps. and that would be onto you guys if you would want to approve it if it's within a close proximity. So that's how that would, you would get your answer.
That's where I was going with this.
Because
they go ahead.
So I heard you a couple times say that this is the minimum
functioning height.
Functioning height. What's the optimal height? And why are we going with the minimum if it's, you know, when I think of minimum, it's just enough to get by?
Just, right.
But what's the optimal? Like, what would you, and why are we going with the minimum, I guess is my question.
So it's a little bit of both. So when we say minimum functioning height, it doesn't mean like this is the lowest that it will work. This is our optimum coverage that Verizon and will be happy about with getting their coverage out to its customers, and emergency services. We could definitely go higher. I don't know off the top of my head, I can't recall if there was a height limit in this zoning district. Going higher, I wouldn't see it being a problem. I know that because this is on private property, we would need to get approval from that, from the owner, of course.
I'm just wondering if, to kind of avoid what Commissioner Fowle is talking about, is, you know, if it was a little bit higher, would we get better coverage so that we don't need another one, a mile or 2 miles, and, you know, have better coverage line of sights?
And let me correct myself. I was just looking, we were reviewing the county code. Co-location is required when feasible and when it minimizes certain effects. So I guess you get into an argument of whether something's feasible or not. We're talking about somebody wanting to locate a mile away, but I correct myself, there is some space in the county code.
I have one other question.
Go ahead.
So, just so I'm understanding too, so when you're putting multiple antennas on the tower, if that's the right word, what is the distance between antennas, like, you know, vertical distance that you need between antennas? Or does it depend on the type of antenna, or is there a minimum distance?
I have seen antennas like with co-locations have anywhere between like a 5 to 8 foot difference or so.
Fairly short.
It's fairly short.
Okay.
Through the chair.
Yes.
If you take a look at the site plan labeled A1.3, it's a diagram of the ground facilities. And I just want to make sure you guys are aware that there is limited space on the ground.
Time out.
It's almost the very last page of the PDF that you sent.
Let me go back to
A1.3.
Exhibit A, comment.
Exhibit B.
Right here. Wait a minute. I just went from A to C.
It's G. So if
It is E?
It's G.
Oh,
Exhibit G.
It's the last page.
It's page A1.3.
Do you want the big map? I have a copy of the big map here.
There's the site plan. Mm-hmm. A4.2.
Okay.
4.1.
A1.3.
That's the triangle.
3.1. 2.
The triangle is the top.
1.3. Got it. Okay.
Okay. So if you take a look at that diagram, the shaded structures are the structures that are proposed as part of Verizon's. However, if you notice, there's not very much ground area left for additional co-location beyond two, it would be pretty tight.
So, your words just now, it would be pretty tight. The size, the footprint of this, even though the tower could co-locate, there's not enough space in the footprint for infrastructure to co-locate.
There is co-locate for at least one more. However, I think three would have to.
Three. They
be
would.
Pretty tight.
They, in that case, should multiple carriers like come in, they would need to work with the landowner like we currently did. They would need to agree to lease however much more space that future carrier would need.
And it would likely require a modification of this use permit to expand that leased area, because this lease area is 40 by 40. That's getting approved or potentially approved as part of this use permit today. However, if they expand that, we would have to take a look at code and see if that expansion would be considered a minor modification or not. And if it's not, then it would have to come back to you guys for approval.
Before I ask my next question. Any other questions?
No.
Commissioner Hartman?
We're not legislative body.
No, I know we're not.
We can't change county code.
No, I know
that. That's kind of where you're going.
Well.
And that's why I'm, before we go any farther with this discussion, county code's gonna have to be changed for us to even begin to explore trying to amend this to accommodate what you want to do.
And since we're redoing the general plan right now, is why I'm having this discussion, so that.
That's not what's in front of us today.
Right, no, no. But I'm getting clarity for what we can and can't do currently. What we may want to do or need to do in the future, it needs to go into the general plan, so we have that flexibility. So I'm glad this is here. So now, my last question for you. The antenna that's going, planned to go on this, let me guess, it's gonna be 5G, not 4G.
There's a combination of both. There's 9 antennas total. 3 of them will be 5G, and the 6 of them will be 4G LTE antennas.
Okay. And since we have a representative from Verizon, and it's not somebody on the phone, is there a reason why when 4G antennas go out, they are not immediately repaired?
I don't have an answer to that question, Commissioner. I apologize.
Okay.
That's more of a a radio frequency engineer would be able, more equipped to answer that question. I don't want to misrepresent or mislead anything.
Okay. Because I, as this body knows, in Scott Valley, we have for about the last 5.5 years had, it went from great Verizon service in Scott Valley to barely able to even get a text in real time, let alone make a phone call. And I make my monthly phone call to Verizon and make the complaint, say, hey, if we have a major disaster here, we have basically all of Scott Valley at one time was Cal North. Cal North got bought out by Verizon, and we had great service, best service of any carrier in California for about 8 years. And then the antenna started to break down and deteriorate and didn't get replaced, didn't get repaired, and the service has gradually gone down. Now we have a fire, and for the last week and a half, good luck if you can connect anything in Scott Valley right now, because of the load that is on basically one working antenna instead of 5 functioning antennas.
Right.
So maybe you can relay that back. It's an issue when you have a disaster like we have right now.
Right, yeah. On that particular thing, I know there's many variables of why something will not work. However, personally, I do have contacts with corporate Verizon. I'm more than happy to push a specific tower by request.
Because this fire here, it's hitting one part of the western side of Scott Valley. We're fuel loaded like crazy to the south and southwest, where this is going to be a repeating deal. The coverage is, the community and the first responders depend on it.
Fully agree. Okay. I have extended family that was affected by the campfire in Paradise, so I'm right there with you guys listening to our conversations.
I don't care about 5G. Hell, go back to 3G, because 3G was beautiful for phone calls. I don't care about data.
Right.
I just want to be able to make a phone call when I need to.
I understand.
So. All right, thank you. Any other questions? All right.
Yep.
With that, I would entertain a motion then.
I move that we adopt resolution PC 2024-01B, a resolution of the Planning Commission of the County of Siskiyou, State of California, determine that the project exempt from CEQA and approving the Towers LLC use permit UP-24-07.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Moved by Commissioner Mello, seconded by Commissioner Lindler. Any further discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same. Let the record, what was that?
Just me, my note.
Okay.
Let
the record show unanimous, and the project is approved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Item 3, items for discussion direction. General plan. believe this goes to Ms. Lang.
Yep, thank you. Good morning, Haley Lang, Planning Director. Quick update regarding the general plan. The consultant team, they're still working through the comments related to updating the chapters of the existing conditions background report. Additionally, the consultant team added the surveys and the exercises from the, you know, six meeting in-person workshops. Those surveys and exercises are on the SISQ 2050 general plan website. And those surveys and exercises are running, I believe, through the end of this month. In meeting with the consultant team on Monday, so the surveys and the went live last week, and so since last week we have about 37 folks that have participated in the online version of the exercises and the surveys, so already far more than the in-person workshops that were held. So with that, that's just my quick update. Happy to answer any questions.
Questions for Ms. Lyne?
Thank you.
With recent circumstances in Scott Valley, I will reiterate my desire that the general plan reflect an accurate detail of new access roads that have been put in. And it dawned on me, nothing in the general plan talks about fuel breaks in communities in Siskiyou County. And I think we would be ahead of the curve if we have a section that at least discusses the importance of creating and maintaining fuel breaks in the, trying to think of the word, not the buffer, but the bridge between wilderness, private timber, and habitation, and the creation and maintenance as well of access roads for first responders in times of natural disaster.
And can I clarify a little bit on that? I would, instead of fuel breaks, call it a fuel hazard reduction zone.
That's fine. That's fine.
That's, there's actually exemptions to achieve that.
And that's where I was getting to the general plan. We need to take a look. Do we need ordinance or modify ordinances to make it easier for fuel load reduction to occur in those zones?
Through the chair.
Yes.
When you do a fire break, can we put in the general plan that it can be drivable for fire apparatus or usable or maintained in some respect besides throwing a gate on it?
Yes, we can check to see.
I mean, this is just a long shot.
Well, there's a difference between the quote unquote fuel break,
yes,
and an access road.
I understand that.
Fuel breaks, I don't care if they're traversable. That's not necessarily important.
Well, if you're going to do one, why can't you just make it a little smoother, is my thing.
Well, it depends on where they're located.
Location, of course.
Of course that is. That's it. Location, and real estate.
Exactly.
And this is real estate.
Yeah, and I think the folks that are putting in fuel hazard reduction zones, part of it is improving the roads for emergency personnel access. I know that's been the goal.
Okay. Thank you.
Those things do go hand in hand, so, but good point to call it out.
Yes, and the safety element within the general plan, you're required to discuss these very issues, things like access, emergency response, and, what occurs with, different issues such as wildfires. So we can definitely take a look and plug that in where it makes sense.
And then the other thing along with that, and I don't know how the commission feels, but, I've been beating on this drum since I joined the commission, is, small lander fuel hazard reduction is very important. And I don't know that there's any direction that the county wants to do outside of 4291, but when there's a foot of pine needles on people's houses, as is evidenced in some of the photos we're seeing out of Scott Valley, there's no inspections being done if there's a foot of pine needles on somebody's roof, which 4291 prohibits.
Right.
And so when a lot of our resources are being allocated to doing structure protections that should already be done. I don't know what the county wants to do, but I think it needs a discussion on the responsibility of landowners that live in the SRA.
Are insurance companies doing a lot of that work?
No, they're just canceling the insurance.
They're canceling, there is...
Well, they're making recommendations.
There, well, it depends on the company. There is some companies...
Remove that tree.
That are going to start making this third-party audit, where every 3 years there will be an inspector on site to even maintain your insurance. But not all insurance companies are going to be doing that.
Nationwide's one that is.
Yeah, and I know Farmers Insurance is. But Cal Fire is also supposed to be doing those inspections, and I don't think they're happening routinely because...
Cal Fire's doing them, but they're only basically doing them from the road. I was talking to one of the battalion chiefs, and he said this year in Scott Valley, they actually had three rigs going through doing quote-unquote inspections. But it was what they could see basically from the road, and they didn't go up all the roads. It was pretty much east side, East Callahan, down Scott River, through Quartz Valley. It was paved. It was what they could see on paved. They didn't hit dirt because they didn't have the personnel and the time to inspect every place. And I told the chief, I said, why don't you just break it out over the course of 3 years and do it by quadrants, start on the edge and just work your way in. Because I've gotten a letter, meet all 4290 regs of that. I'm not worried about it. I'm a house on a hill surrounded by alfalfa and orchard grass and dirt. You don't need to be inspecting me. Get up in Partridge Pines, Kellum's Lane, up Patterson. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about me on Highway 3, and I'm not even SRA.
No. Yeah. And then, you know, the other thing, too, is maybe somewhere in the general plan they talk about the community wildfire protection plans, because those plans do exist, and they're approved by the state. You know, maybe there's some kind of nexus there, so... You know, we're not having to reinvent that wheel because a lot of that work's been done. Just a thought.
And I believe those plans are going to be integrated in our new local hazard mitigation plan update, which is currently taking place. And so we will be using a lot of that information for the safety elements. So we could definitely bridge that.
Okay.
I guess my focus before I'm done on this commission is we create a potential path if and when the political environment is ripe to attack, where Siskiyou County, based upon our general plan, our response plan, we've created a pathway so that our residences can get affordable insurance, whether they are a business or simply a homeowner. Where we can go to the state and we can go to the insurance companies and say, hey, we've created an environment where our constituents are insurable at a reasonable rate. They don't have to go to the FAIR plan. Because as soon as you have to go to FAIR plan and you're a business, forget it. You're done.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've got to keep that in our mind for our constituents so they can get affordable insurance, period.
As well as the public safety aspect. I mean, I think people with the Shelley Fire, hopefully their eyes are opened over in that Scott Valley. You know, having worked in fire most of my career, how fast trees burn, you know, and, you know, 4291 is there for a reason, and I hate being the Gestapo and making people do something on their property. But at the same time, if you're asking a firefighter to put their life on the line, you kind of have to do something for your property or expect the consequence of them not protecting your home. Because mm-hmm. they stratify which homes they're going to protect and which homes they're not. Mm-hmm. And that's just the reality. So
it's only around the general plan, I believe. But this term right to farm, is that going to be incorporated in the general plan? And what is it? Is it an ordinance or is it a...
Yes, so it's an ordinance within our code, and so pretty much when folks come in and apply for a discretionary application, whether it's a use permit, zone change, you know, subdivision map, things of that nature. They have to sign a right to farm acknowledgement, which just acknowledges, hey, there is farming and agricultural activity that takes place, you know, surrounding my property, and I'm aware of that. And so
it's an exception to the deed, is it?
It's, I believe it's recorded within deeds sometimes, right?
Yes, it's actually something that's recorded so that if you do a title search on a property in the future, it's listed with that particular property.
Can I ask a question? Through the chair. So with that, the landowners that need to sign that,
mm-hmm.
are those landowners that are within a certain distance adjacent to ag land?
Yes.
And does that extend to TPZ land as well? Because timber is technically under the Department of Agriculture as well.
It should, yes. And you have to be adjacent to a parcel that's zoned for agriculture, which is, I mean, pretty much all of our zoning districts, even rural residential agriculture, right, which is our predominant zoning. So pretty much all property owners have to sign it at some point in time. Yeah.
Okay.
Anything else on general plan? Item 4, miscellaneous, future meeting, August 21st. Any correspondence?
I have something as LAFCO. We have posted our countywide fire municipal service review and sphere of influence update. It's on the LAFCO page, which is available on the county's website. If anybody wanted to take a look at it, it's available.
Staff comments? Commission comments.
No.
Chevron decision.
Chevron.
That's federal. That's not state.
Right.
Secret.
The Chevron
comments.
Supreme Court. Oh,
yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
So.
Do you want me to comment on it?
Yeah.
I can. I
hope you're studying it
for this for once. The Chevron doctrine is federal. Basically, it said that federal courts must defer to how federal agencies defer to, federal courts must defer to agencies' interpretations of federal law. That is not followed in California state courts, and maybe surprisingly, has never been followed in state courts or state court. When the Chevron doctrine was overturned last week, basically now federal courts will not defer to federal agencies at all, meaning anybody opposing a federal regulation will be on equal footing with the agency. It doesn't mean that the agency's interpretation of federal law will automatically be overruled by the federal court, but it's on a much more equal basis. In state proceedings, believe it or not, that's always been the law in California. California state courts do not defer to state agencies' interpretations, such as the Water Control Board. So I think its impact is mostly going to be felt in, not mostly, almost entirely in the federal courts and how they defer to agencies. So, for instance, if the county does have an action in federal court and is challenging some sort of federal regulation or agency, the county would have a much better chance of challenging that agency's decision or opinion. But in the state court, it's always been that.
So we're basically right where we're at. That whatever you guys, the staff, accomplishes, you have to do an EIR or whatever. The science that comes out of that, we still have to adhere to that as the best science.
Well, I'm not, that's a little bit different because, first of all, there's what we would be talking about is the CEQA regulations, and I suppose perhaps how some state agency would be interpreting them. And in terms of best science, the Planning Commission or the Board of Supervisors have always been independent judges of who has the best science
meaning there's two opposing parties with different views, for instance, on noise. So long as whoever you're going with has some substantial facts and reasoning to back up whatever science they have, for instance, on the subject of noise, then by your judgment, that would prevail, even if the other side also has some expert argument and technical reasons for why their noise argument should prevail. So as the Chevron doctrine doesn't really speak to that level, but if choosing best science also meant relying on some agency's interpretation of science, I think I'm starting to get a little bit too convoluted, but I'm trying to fit my answer in your question. If it depended on some agency's interpretation of law that applied to the science, we would not have to defer to that. And I'm not sure I'm trying to pound a square peg into a round hole by answering your question, because really, the Chevron doctrine normally would come into judging who has the best science.
That's decided by a court of law, right?
Can I?
So,
yeah.
I've gone into the weeds of Chevron, and the application or the relevance that I look at this, and I hear what you're saying, that the California courts, in your words, I believe you said, have always
used independent
judgment. Used independent, and we are quote unquote on equal standing with the agency, which we know we're not. The relevance that I, or the example that I think of is with the State Water Board, where you have an agency that through agency decision, not based on a law that went through the Assembly, the Senate, and signed by the governor, says you as a landowner must put a flow meter on your wells when that's not a law, and we challenge that. Do we now have ourselves in a better position to say this isn't a law, this is simply an agency regulation, therefore it is not lawful, and have more standing to challenge such a regulation?
Well, let me clarify. When you're talking about this landowner, are you talking about an evidentiary hearing before the State Water Board?
I'm talking flat out, Shasta Valley, Scott Valley, all pumps will have flow meters.
You're talking about general rulemaking.
A mitigation through regulation, not based on law.
Yeah. Well, if you're going to state court, the loss of the Chevron doctrine isn't going to make any difference at all. Yes.
If it were to make it outside California, we get ruled against, goes to California Supreme Court, we still don't get the ruling that is in favor of private property.
Right.
Then we challenge it in the Supreme Court. Now, all of a sudden, now we have better standing now that Chevron has been deferred.
You could. I mean, it depends. I mean, the Chevron doctrine goes to really rulemaking by agencies when Congress has said something like, regulate clean water, and to the EPA or something, and that doesn't put in any standards. And then the EPA said, okay, well, we're going to allow so many parts of lead per million in the water. That type of rule would have been given deference before Chevron doctrine, now would not, because the agency was filling in a hole that Congress left.
Which is exactly what's happened at state. Yeah. State legislature has told State Water Resource Control Board do something about water quantity. Yeah. Therefore, State Water Board takes it upon themselves, we're going to require everyone to put a meter, no matter what it costs, you're going to be required to do it.
Yeah. Well, if you take the challenge to the state courts, it's going to be the same as it always was. If you somehow get the challenge in the federal courts, or it ends up at the Supreme Court, Yes, there will be a change in that. There'll be no difference of a federal court to the SWRCB.
That's what I thought. Okay.
Yeah.
But it's got to get to that level.
Yeah.
I understand that. Okay, thank you.
It's just a long ways down the road.
Yeah.
In our decision-making process with staff, required a noise study, traffic, whatever
right.
it is.
Right.
Okay, that's, they go out and hire an independent team to do that analysis.
Correct.
That's the science that we're, we have to go with.
Yep.
We can't take, a group comes in and says, well, that science is wrong, here's our science, it's better. We're still bound by it.
Yep.
Until somebody challenges that.
Correct. Okay. Any other, let's hear, were we on commissioner yet? We were on, okay, we started commissioner comments, and Mr. Hart started with Chevron.
Second thing. I had contacted both Haley and Rick. Music festival up in Alder Creek was going on. Vermont roads look like the 10 freeway when I come out of there. You had mentioned to me that they had fulfilled all of their conditions but didn't have a signed permit yet.
Who are you talking about?
The Shasta Star Camp.
Oh, okay. That's back on?
Well, it was.
Yeah, it happened.
Yeah. Yeah, so how does that, if they don't have a signed permit, they're still allowed to go?
Well, the conditions still remain in place. What happened was senior planner Jared went out on site with all the other agencies, made sure the checklist was complete, signed off on the checklist, didn't actually sign the permit. Timing, basically, it then occurred before.
Yeah,
an internal conversation to actually issue the permit. Yeah, so it's
there's some vehicles
that
went up there. That I'm going, the cost of that vehicle, and you're driving that up on that road. Wow.
Yeah.
$100,000 motorhomes going up there.
I believe it.
Wow. Well, that fire made a pretty nice road up through there. So.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anything else, Commissioner Hart?
No, I'm fine.
Commissioner Mello?
No, sir, thank you.
Commissioner Veal?
No.
Commissioner Lindler?
No, I just have a comment that I just want to thank CAL FIRE and the Forest Service for the tremendous amount of resources we have on the Shelley Fire. We have never had this, in at least my experience, had this kind of support.
Ever.
So I just want to publicly thank them because it's been tremendous.
Looking at the numbers, though, the McKinney Fire actually had more resources on it than the Shelley.
Really?
We had 3,500 folks on the McKinney early on, you know. And with this case, fortunately, we're the first to happen in the state, so resources are available.
Yeah.
But I was just doing some research and surprised to see, because I figured the same thing.
Yeah.
This is unprecedented. But McKinney Fire.
Where was the McKinney? Where was that?
Right here. Backside of Wairika.
Oh, okay.
All right. was
in your backyard.
I can't keep up
yeah.
with the whole
that was 2 years
but
ago.
It's pretty
yeah.
impressive.
I appreciate the clarification. Maybe I should clarify. The first fire I've been involved
yeah.
with, because our managed land is heavily impacted.
Yeah.
First fire I've been involved with, because, you know, when we had the river complex, we had a couple hundred people for 100,000 acres.
Mm-hmm.
Here, it's impressive, and they are... they are doing good things. And then I've met the new climate supervisor, Chris Christofferson, and I am highly optimistic at his future direction of the Klamath. So.
Did you say Chris Christofferson?
Yeah,
just like the singer. Yeah. So positives there.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very excited about that.
I will echo Commissioner Lindler's appreciation to the staff, and I am willing to bet you a beer at the bar that the Shelley will surpass the McKinney staff because they are demobbing Wairika and sending them to the valley, and I bet we're over 4,000 by noon today.
Hmm. All right.
I don't know how many personnel were here in Wairika, but they are all getting shifted right now to Aetna and downriver into Quartz Valley.
Yeah.
On this topic, and been trying to get through to Sheriff LaRue on this, we're going to have a serious sit-down with the sheriff as soon as possible once things have settled down. And when I say we, Farm Bureau and cattlemen, it is wonderful to have the outside law enforcement in there to dissuade looting and whatnot on the road closures. I don't have a problem with that. Do not misinterpret what I'm about to say. What I am going to say is, while the livestock passes have been beneficial, a lot of the outside law enforcement have no clue what those mean, and I have had to get escorted by either Josh or Clint or Missy or Dan Beck to get through those road closures to get feed and whatnot into critters. We've got to become more flexible, and that needs to, maybe if there's a place in the general plan in the discussion of, in the case of disasters. We don't have any shelter in Siskiyou County that could house 500 to 1,000 head of cattle. And we have individuals who don't leave evacuation zones because they have animals that cannot be housed at a shelter and will not leave because they know that if they do, they can't get back in. It's a lot cheaper and a lot more effective and makes a lot more sense if we were able to simply show the driver's license that our address is up this road and we're just coming in to feed, water, take care of the livestock, and then we'll exit to protect our human self, but take care of the livestock. And it would also potentially reduce the impact, whether it be at the fairgrounds, potentially it was good, you know, we were going to take critters at Pleasure Park. We've got a lot of livestock out there that fairgrounds, I'm sending hay over to Jim Smith, a couple truck and trailer loads, because they're out of hay and need hay because of the number of animals they have. Potentially they'd have fewer animals if people were confident that they could keep them at home and they themselves exit, but know they can come and go to care for them, would put less strain on our resources over here. But that is the one thing that needs to be worked on that really came to light in this fire. So.
And these are people even that have that ag pass, they're still being denied.
I've got the ag pass, and I still have to get escorted because the people,
the information breakdown.
Yuba City police officer, which ironically, they should know about it because livestock passes are down in Butte County also. They should be familiar with it, but it's, so we get our local police officer because sheriff's deputies don't know Scott Valley. We hardly ever see him over there. I mean, Scott Valley is Josh, Missy, Clint, and our new hire. We've got four police officers from Aetna that run Aetna, and if there's a major emergency, yeah, sheriffs come over. We don't have the deputies on staff to cover Scott Valley like they used to.
Through the chair?
Yeah.
Real quick. Maybe they could do, just as a suggestion, because, you know, as a cooperator with land there, we're able to come in and out. They gave us, they being the incident command team, because they want to know who's in and out.
Right.
They gave us these laminated cards that are like cooperator, and they're a number, and then you have to like check them out. So it's like, you know, they gave our company three, and that way they know who's in it, who's in. Maybe they could do something like that, so it's easy and simple, and you just meet with them.
It needs to be done, because we had a, well, everybody's probably aware, there was an incident a few days ago where an individual was arrested for assaulting a law enforcement officer, and the individual was asked by CAL FIRE Incident Command to go place boards in a pond to reduce the outflow so there'd be more water available in the pond for pulling out. And the individual was on their way to go do that per IC direction and was stopped. And this individual, yeah, probably short-tempered. I know the individual well, and I'm sure words were exchanged, but it's like, even telling them, I was told to go here, nope, can't go there, and tempers got out of control, but it's like,
can you just
try to
read who that is?
Yeah. No, I'm not.
You need to have a written note.
Right, but it was like, he was called on the phone.
Yeah.
He's less than a mile away. Jumps in his pickup, throws the boards in the pickup, and is headed up there to go do it to help out the fire crews, and stopped. And it's when we get out of town law enforcement who don't know the area, don't know the people, that's when we have the issues. Mm-hmm. Communication. It was a failure to communicate properly on both sides.
Mm-hmm. And everybody has a story, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
So how come they're not employing the big box burn theory over there?
Excuse me?
Well.
Wait, I didn't hear the question.
He's asking about the big box.
Back up 5 miles and just torch it.
Why are they not?
Yeah.
Aetna, Greenview, Fort Jones. And they had Greenville, and that didn't go so well, did it?
Yeah. And a lot of phone calls and pressure since day one. But part of it is to the location, like you said.
Yeah.
They're, even because it's wilderness,
yeah.
You know, they're in there being active even in wilderness because of the threat to the community there.
And it's new forest supervisor, and it's the CAL FIRE battalion chiefs that we have in place currently.
Yeah.
They're on top of it, and this is the best response and action I have ever seen on a fire.
Yeah.
My big compliments to all leadership right now. This is an example of how this type of incident should be handled.
Yeah. I've been pleasantly surprised. Now, are they doing everything we wish? No. But they're contrasted with other fires where they do the big box and they're 10 miles away. That's not this. They're going as direct as they can. Yes, they are.
Yeah.
That's 180-degree change.
Yeah. 180. Yeah.
Yep.
Are they staying on 24-hour?
No.
That's
they're
an
on
issue.
12-hour rotation, but the contractors and CAL FIRE, yeah. They are
24.
24.
No, I know they are. It's, yeah. It's Forest Service.
Forest Service. And that's coming from direction above them.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And we're even having the birds are flying at night. Villain, they're off of Horn Lane and the airport, which in the past,
did not
when
happen.
The sun went down, aircraft stopped. The birds are still flying at night when they have visibility, which hasn't happened in the past.
Yeah. Through the chair, just another comment too. The plus side of this is the dedicated resources do fuel reduction out off of Sky River Road and Sky Bar way off. So they're not dilly down around. They're using their extra personnel to actually do some mitigation.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep, and I can say even on our managed land, they're working with our company on improving our work. And then, you know, even as far as like how they usually like will slash pack the fuel breaks, they're going to leave them open for us to maintain as fuel reduction zones, which will add to what we've already done out there. So I've never seen them being so helpful.
Yeah,
it's a complete. You know, I've been very critical in the past, and I can say with everything I've had, it's a 180.
Yeah.
I'm pleasantly surprised.
You need it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Any other comments? Adjourned.